The film Master and Commander, based on the seafaring novels of Patrick O'Brien, opens today, and there's already talk of possible sequels. Master and Commander has been called a $150 million art house movie by reviewers, a description that suggests that it is simultaneously very large and very small, which set our critic Bob Mondello thinking.
When they screened The Matrix Revolutions a couple of weeks ago here in Washington, they started the screening with almost 30 minutes of coming attractions trailers, most of them for action movies. Each one looked as if it were trying to outkick, outsmash, and out-explode the previous one, or, in the case of the war movies, just outmass and outmaneuver them. I won't swear that I've got the images lined up right, but I seem to recall armies marching through fields in The Last Samurai, storming battlements in The Alamo, and thundering down hillsides in the new Lord of the Rings movie. Or maybe it was The Last Samurai that they were thundering down hillsides in. I do know that they were sailing boats in Master and Commander, and rowing boats in Troy, an upcoming Brad Pitt as Achilles epic. Lots of boats. Too many boats. So many boats, in fact, that it would have taken the entire population of all the Greek city-states to man them. But never mind, this is Hollywood, and since Troy will be sailing into theaters after Master and Commander, it pretty much has to have more boats. Just as The Matrix had to have more Agent Smiths in the second movie, and more of those metallic squid things in the third one. Remember the first Matrix? How small it was, with its whole cast trying to squeeze into a phone booth?
So what do you need? Besides a miracle.
Guns. Lots of guns.
Then they got a bigger budget, and the second Matrix movie had a huge underground city and 100 Agent Smiths.
It's going into replication.
And by the third one, it had a gazillion metallic squiggly things coming at the camera. Creeping gigantism isn't new. The same thing happened to Star Wars, which was, in the first movie, about three kids, a Wookiee, and a couple of robots, and which four movies later features clone armies fighting over tariffs and trade routes. Or the Alien franchise, which originally had a single creature terrifying a few people on a spaceship.
What the hell was that?
But morphed into a series where huge caverns filled with eggs started hatching and threatening population centers. Meanwhile, Alien's original director, Ridley Scott, graduated to bigger budgets too. Budgets in the $100 million range, which allowed him to brush in thousands of extras digitally in Gladiator, and which in 2006 will no doubt allow him to brush in hundreds of thousands in Gladiator 2. The impulse behind a sequel, obviously, is to give audiences more of what they liked the first time. But in Hollywood, more never means just a second helping of. It means a bigger helping of. Sequels never get more intimate. There have been a few that stayed about the same, The Godfather, for instance, and Lord of the Rings, but they were pretty big to start with. The Back to the Future movies didn't get bigger exactly, though the last one did put a locomotive where a DeLorean had been, and nobody's suggesting cloning Hannibal Lecter. Yet. Still, even with these models of comparative restraint, it's hard to imagine Hollywood deciding to make a nice intimate follow-up to a movie that's being sold as a blockbusting seafaring adventure the first time out. So if you're of a mind to have your buckle swashed in a comparatively minor key, you probably ought to catch Master and Commander while the Captain Aubrey saga is still in its infancy. Right now, the HMS Surprise is only chasing one ship halfway around the world. If there is a sequel, that will change. And by the third movie, Tinseltown tendencies being what they are, Captain Aubrey will likely be facing down the whole Napoleonic Navy. I'm Bob Mondello.